What's up? Welcome to Sweathead with Mark Pollard. I have Mary Busby all the way from Birmingham, Alabama. Mary's 2 years out of school and is a creative at Loose Communications down there in Alabama. What's up, Mary?
Hi. Thanks for having me on, Mark. I'm excited.
I'm excited. I'm more excited. Who's the most excited? It's me, Mary.
We could have a contest. That's fine.
an excitement arm wrestle. I like it.
There you go.
We're going to talk about classism today because you've been thinking about this for probably a long time. You've written about it recently in a beautiful piece on Medium called As Advertising Becomes Pay to Play, Creative Potential is Wasted.
Yeah. I love talking about this.
Yeah. And so I think it's a very important topic, but as we get into it, or before we get into it, could you tell us a little bit about your history?
Yeah, absolutely. So I grew up in Alabama, and it's funny because I didn't know, I speak about this in my piece a little bit, but I had no idea what advertising really was. I just, you know, saw it on cartoons, on the television growing up. I saw billboards for personal law injury lawyers and that kind of thing. So I really had no idea what it was. And I went to school and spent 7 years in undergrad, believe it or not. So when I tell people that, their eyes get kind of wide. And they're like, wow, 7 years? But I really wanted to figure out what I wanted to do with my life. I needed to find a job that was stable financially. So I thought about nursing. I thought about all sorts of jobs that could provide that financial stability. But I also had this creative yearning inside of me. And so I wanted to find something that fulfilled me personally and not just financially. And so I changed my major a bunch of times. I took on an enormous amount of debt. So I had a friend that really encouraged me to go on this trip to New York. You'll figure out what advertising is and what creative was really about, and you'll really like it. And so I was like, okay. And my boyfriend at the time, he's now my husband, but his family was kind enough to bankroll that trip for me so I could go. And I had never really been to anywhere like New York. And it was a huge culture shock just being in the city. I was like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. And we toured agencies. We went to the one show. And after that, I was head over heels in love with advertising. It's what I wanted to do. So I came back and I applied to our creative portfolio program at the University of Alabama called Minerva. And I kind of rolled the dice a little bit. I got in luckily and spent 2 years in that program and then graduated. And now I'm here working in Birmingham as a creative at Lewis. And so that's kind of my background and my history as far as getting into the industry. But yeah, I really had no idea what advertising was. And people in my cohort at the University of Alabama had similar experiences because most of us there had just chosen Alabama because of in-state tuition. It was, you know, a little bit cheaper to go there. And they had all really just stumbled into Minerva, basically. And so it was a really interesting group of people because the program was so new at the time. We were the second group of students to graduate from that program. So it was still in its infancy and still is, really. It's still new, but it's grown. It's very competitive. So it's really great. But yeah, I mean, all of us were this scrappy little group of students, you know, coming out of this new portfolio program.
There's a lot there, but I don't do a lot of preparations for these interviews. And you know what? I knew where you worked. And then when we spoke beforehand, I thought you said Loose Communications in the same way that someone with ears like mine might misunderstand how someone from Louisville.
Right.
I might misunderstand that as well. But I know the folks at Lewis Communications up in Nashville and have met
from
Alabama as well. So what's up? And first of all, I guess me saying Loose Communications is how I sound Southern, right?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
Oh, I'm so embarrassed. Do you feel that Alabama is remote from the rest of America? Or is it just that it's remote from some of the industries that are big in other parts of America?
I would definitely say it's remote in a lot of different ways. I think in advertising and tech especially, it's remote, but in other ways it is as well. I mean, we have such a strong, not to get political here, but a strong, you know, political, blue political presence in Birmingham, but it's often, you know, super isolated from other blue areas of the country in that way. We don't get a lot of, you know, help nationally from the DNC. So there's things like that that makes it a little bit remote, especially in the more rural areas. When people go to high school and they graduate, they're usually going to places like the mines or to go farm. So it's definitely remote in a lot of different areas, but especially for advertising. I mean, it's pretty geographically isolated in that way.
Mm. And then getting a little bit of money together to be able to get to New York, I'd imagine that that was a big deal. I managed from Australia to do some overseas trips when I was younger, and they were always a big deal. But when you're young and you don't have income coming in and you've got debt sitting on your head.
Oh, totally. Like
and some people wouldn't understand this, right? Because right. they might be used to moving around the world with family in a particular way. But when you don't necessarily have a lot, things like that can be kind of life-changing.
Oh, it totally was. I mean, you know, I have the privilege of going to school and being able to go to the University of Alabama. I did, you know, I put myself through school with loans. So there was that, but even being able to go to school, I was so lucky. But yeah, I mean, I was working full-time through college. And so, you know, supporting myself and just having that gift from my boyfriend's family to send me to New York. When they first told me, I didn't believe them. I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I thought it was kind of a joke suggestion, but they were completely serious. And I mean, I can say if I hadn't gone on that trip, I don't think I would have even been introduced to really what advertising was on a holistic level and what the creative potential was there. And, you know, I shudder to think about that possibility because I love it so much. But yeah, I mean, it was hugely life-changing in that way. And then even just going to New York, I never really thought that that would be a possibility for me, especially as young as I was. I mean, you know, I knew that I was eventually going to graduate and get a job where I would experience financial stability, but I never thought that that would have been an option at that time in my life. So I was hugely thankful and lucky. And yeah, I mean, I just see that all around me, people that could have that potential, but don't.
I'm going to use some words that I also don't mean in a political way, but I often wonder how people experience growing up when they might have an inkling that they have a creative spirit within. And by the way, to me, that is most people, but I think for some people, it's a big inkling. But sure. Having that creative spirit in an area that is relatively small C and maybe capital C conservative. I'm not judging.
No, totally. I completely understand.
What's that like?
Yeah, so it's interesting. You know, there's pockets of culture and art that are really, really present here in Birmingham. Like throughout the history of our state, there's always been that presence. But on the same side of that coin, it isn't very encouraged to go into the arts or any creative fields just because of that economic instability that's associated with those fields. So yeah, I have tons of friends who were like, yeah, I was never encouraged to do those things because I needed to get a job that would provide me financial stability. So it's definitely not super encouraged. You know, there's the classic, you know, a lot of our schools, their arts programs get cut with funding and things like that. So it's not always encouraged here for sure. And it's harder because there aren't very many resources for people who do have creative potential, especially in more rural parts of the state. It's different when you're in, you know, these suburbs or these pockets of Alabama that are a little bit more well off, but it's mm-hmm. definitely almost, you know, nearly impossible when you're outside of that bubble.
Okay. Is there a vibe of suspicion, mistrust, and fear towards people who are a bit different, towards people who are creative? And a totally reasonable answer could be, no, not at all. We're just like everywhere else. And I don't yeah. mean to like exoticize Alabama, but no. I hear stories from people.
Yeah. I think it's less that and more of, I think there's this stigma, especially, again, it's different. Alabama's interesting because you do have these pockets that are very progressive and very intellectually driven and things like that, that are more blue. They're more encouraging about going into the arts. So it's different there. I would say in the parts of the state that are more suspicious, they'd be saying things like, oh, well, you're wasting your money on a liberal arts degree and you're not going to get a job. And there's that classic trope of you're going to be lazy and not have a job. And what are you going to do with that degree? Versus, you know, suspicion of them being different. But yeah, there's definitely some stigma associated with it around here for sure. But I think that could be said for lots of places as well.
How did you know that you had creative potential?
That's a great question. I definitely was into like drawing and stuff when I was younger. And, you know, I really enjoyed writing and I was really good at, you know, English and literature, those classes versus my math and science classes. And I really enjoyed reading. I was a huge bookworm growing up and I still am. So I think I just kind of dabbled in lots of these different areas. And then once I got to college and out of high school, because my high school wasn't very arts-driven, it was very, you know, they had a law academy and an engineering academy and these different things, but not much in the way of art. So once I got to college was when I really tapped into, oh, there's this whole other world that I could experience and be a part of. So I think when I got to college and when I started, you know, after I did the gauntlet of the nursing degrees and such, I was, you know, I took graphic design classes and creative writing classes. And that's kind of really where I discovered, oh, that, you know, I'm creative and I can use this as a way to be employable.
I giggled in your article, and you mentioned it earlier when you talked about the billboards of personal injury lawyers, because yeah. I have this, I think it's not a hobby now. I think it's just this terrible habit that when I go to different cities around the States, I just go for walks, and Google Maps or whatever I'm using makes the walk look decent. Mm-hmm. And then I constantly find myself trying to get around freeways and highways, and there's no one else walking. It's just me.
Right.
People are looking at me. Honestly, I had this in Nashville. Like, people would like look at me sideways, like, "What's this guy doing walking here?" And wherever I'm walking in along those freeways and highways, there are these billboards for personal injury lawyers. I saw a few down in Orlando recently, and it's interesting because that small, I'm going to call it like the small town advertising scene is basically someone with a small business who's got a little bit of narcissism and ego yes. going on, and then they stick themselves on a billboard, and they could be selling food, they could be selling real estate, they could be selling law, and it's sometimes quite hilarious, but not usually very creative.
Right.
And you said that it took you to move to New York, to visit New York, for you to realize that there's a whole other world.
Right. Yes. I mean, it's here in Birmingham. There's one, his name is Alexander Shinar, and he's notorious throughout our entire state. I mean, he buys billboards up and down the state. He does commercials. He's actually really active on social, which is really interesting. And people just engage with him based off of his, you know, his fame from, you know, I literally own every billboard in the state of Alabama. So it's definitely interesting. And Birmingham has a great, you know, a great ad scene. There's lots of creative people here. We have, you know, five or six really, really awesome agencies. And, you know, I think that speaks to, we need to do a better job as a community connecting with, you know, our own community and saying, hey, this is an opportunity for you. And guess what? The cost of living in Alabama is amazing. And you can have a really financially stable life here and be creative and do things that you really love. So yeah, it shouldn't have to take, you know, someone flying to New York to go on this very niche specific trip to understand what advertising is and how they can be a part of it.
Yeah, and Alabama's got beaches.
Exactly. We have the beaches. We have the mountains. There's, you know, we have woods all over the place. It's a beautiful, beautiful state. So, yeah, definitely.
What are the other agencies that stand out for you in the area?
So Big Communications is another really great one. They recently just did a Super Bowl ad, actually a national Super Bowl ad for, I believe it was Fox Sports. So they're really great. We've got another one called Cayenne Creative. They do a lot of fun stuff. We've got Intermark Group and several other agencies that are a little bit more design driven. Tatum Design is a really great design firm. We have lots of different places. But yeah, I really encourage people to just research the different agencies around here, and I think they'll be surprised. You know, I saw a fishbowl comment once that was disparaging Alabama a little bit, but I think once you look into the scene here, you'll be quite pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, I was actually on the Intermark website the other day. I had a quick look at one of their webinars and noticed that they'd done some pretty cool work for Alabama tourism and others.
Yeah.
But also, I would say that your point, because outside of America, especially when presidents shift, people outside of America can be very damning about America. And your point there is that what you're seeing on the news and on television isn't always what's really going on the ground. A big country like this is going to be hard to manage, but actually when you get into the communities, like for the most part, I mean, it's often really beautiful, interesting people that care about their communities with interesting stuff going on. It's just, you can't approach the idea of America as this like monolithic concept, because it's not. It's a bunch of different villages and towns loosely connected by gravel and
definitely
plains.
Definitely. And you know, Alabama will definitely surprise people. People come here and they're like, oh, I was so surprised at how cool it was. And I mean, we've got a huge, you know, so much historic music was recorded in Muscle Shoals, and there's so much history, and just such a, our state is really diverse, actually. And I think people, you know, when they think of Alabama, they don't immediately think, oh, diverse. We definitely have our issues, like 100% that are plaguing our state for sure. But it's awesome because it's such a diverse place, and people are doing amazing things all over the state. So it's a pleasantly surprising place.
I always feel slightly guilty about making one person a spokesperson for an entire region that I've never visited. However, I love hearing about how people live, so I also don't feel guilty.
Yeah.
How did you make the run from your trip to New York to actually getting a job?
Yeah. So like I said, I definitely rolled the dice, because the program that I applied for, it only took applications in the spring. And so at this point, I was like a senior already. Like, I should have been graduating. And so I had to wait an entire year to apply to this program. And so I did that. I took the prereqs that were necessary. I, you know, took on more hours at my job so I could go part-time in school. And luckily I got in. So I got in, I worked really hard for the next 2 years of my book. And you know, initially I was like, oh yes, I'm going to go to New York, or I'm going to go to a big market. And you know, that's what it means to make it. If you want to be successful, you have to go to one of those places. And then I started interning at Lewis during my last year of school. And I had so many great experiences, even just as an intern. I was able to pitch to clients. I got my hands dirty on things. I could run certain projects, and that's been true for my 2 years time here. And so I realized that, you know, staying somewhere like Lewis is great, because I was able to get experience that people at larger, you know, agencies, especially the network agencies, might not necessarily have. And another good thing about Lewis is that I initially started as an art director. And so then I expressed interest in copy a couple of years ago, and my ECD was kind enough to let me swap. And so I feel like that was definitely a unique circumstance. And so I've been able to grow into a leader here at my agency, even though I'm a couple of years out of school. And now I help run the intern program, and I help do different things around here. And I'm so glad that I chose to stay here at Lewis because of how much experience I've gotten. And, you know, whenever I do make the next step, I'll be able to carry that into my next job.
Mm. How many years were you in college, full-time and part-time altogether?
7.
Oh, I heard that number before, but I wondered if that the portfolio program was in addition to that 7.
Yeah, so it's grouped into your undergrad degree. So it's a portfolio program, but it's nice because you also get an undergraduate degree. So I have a communications degree as well as, you know, my portfolio. So 7 total years with that program.
Okay. There's no pressure to answer this question, but I'll still ask it. How much college debt did you graduate with?
I have $75,000 of student debt. Okay. And so it's a lot, but I made that conscious choice going into school. I knew that I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do. I knew that it was probably going to take some time. And I knew that I was going to have a lot of debt. And so that was a very, you know, personal choice for me. A lot of people don't have the luxury of making that choice. But yes, I do have a pretty penny of debt.
Okay. How long do you think it's going to take you to pay that off?
Oh, that's a good question. I try not to think about it too much, but you know, I would imagine a pretty long time. I won't apply a number of years just because I don't really know. And it's tough to tell, you know, right now I'm not making, you know, huge money. I'm not, you know, being able to pay a bunch on it every month, but I know as I get older and grow in my career, I'll begin to make more money. And so at that time I'll be able to apply more to it. Mm-hmm. So I don't really know. It will be a long time, but you know, I try not to think about it too much.
Yeah, I just think it's a context that is relatively new in the world, the amount of debt that people are graduating with. But in America, it's more emphasized, let's say. And if you move here from another country and you're working with people in the advertising industry and you don't have debt, some of them might, and some of them might have it well into their 40s and 50s. And so it can lead to a lot of different decisions that can maybe lead to someone who's new here feeling a little bit of culture shock.
Definitely.
I just want to read the opening paragraph to your piece on Medium. As advertising becomes pay to play, creative potential is wasted. This is the opening paragraph. I grew up in a lower income, working class household in Alabama with a single mom and a dysfunctional extended family. The advertising industry is not set up for people like me to succeed. Tell us why.
Yeah. So I think from the get-go, agencies requiring college degrees and, you know, extensive portfolios that, you know, cuts off a huge group of people right from the bat. A lot of people won't even be able to go to college. You know, my husband went to a very rural high school and most of his classmates went to the mines after they graduated, if they graduated. A lot of them didn't graduate. And so there's a huge chunk of the country that is cut off immediately just from educational requirements. And then also, you know, just in my own experience, I have a lot of privilege as a white woman that was able to go to college. And even I hadn't heard of advertising. And so most of these people don't even know that this is a career. Or if they do, they're not chasing after these careers because they're going to say, if they're going to invest in their education and invest in things like that, they're going to be going for jobs like nursing or teaching or, you know, accounting or whatever it may be, because they know they're going to experience stability with that. So I think, you know, advertising not being known as a career in general is keeping a lot of people out. It's, you know, this expectation of college degree requirements of, you know, oh, you need to go to portfolio school if you want to be a creative, your book isn't good enough, you're going to have to, you know, go into this very expensive program. That's immediately cutting off people right there. And then there's a whole, I speak about this in my piece as well, but as a creative, you know, we're told, oh, you've got to have a really cool side hustle. You've got to do something else outside of advertising to show that you are a holistic and interesting person. Like, you've got to be in a band, or you've got to do this kind of art, or you've got to make this project, whatever it may be. And, you know, while I understand theoretically how that could show a person is, you know, very interesting and smart and passionate, there's so many problems with that expectation, because inherently so many people don't have the time or the effort or the financial means to do that. And just from my own personal experience, you know, I was estranged from my mom for about 7 years. And then I had to put her in a nursing home this year because she was diagnosed with dementia. And so I've been working with the nursing home and putting in a lot of time and energy into that. And so just from my own experience, and I'm not her direct personal caretaker. So people that are caretakers of a loved one, of a child, you know, single parents, there's this expectation, like, how are they supposed to be doing these things on the side to set themselves up before anyone else? So there's just these certain expectations that keep people out. And so I think we have to understand people holistically. I think we have to stop recruiting, you know, inside of a coastal bubble. I think a lot of times what happens is, you know, at these top agencies, we'll have these top creatives and they'll bounce around to just different shops, and they kind of, you know, make the rounds. And I think there's a huge group of creatives and outside of creatives, just people in general in the industry that do that. And so there's a whole, it's hard to, you know, I mean, personally, there's like a stigma against Alabama, like I said. And so someone's going to look at someone from an agency in Alabama and someone from an agency in New York very differently. And I think, you know, have that unconscious bias. And so I think there's all of these different factors at play that exclude these people from the industry for sure.
Yeah, there's a long list of things there from, I'm going to repeat some of them, from needing a degree, needing a portfolio, being cut off from education, maybe at a young age or from a particular type of education at the time that might be most useful to getting in the industry, not even knowing about advertising, getting shooed away by people around them to do something more serious, more practical, wanting to invest in a potentially more stable career if they are able to invest in study to get a more stable career, this pressure to have a side hustle, and then, you know, some family challenges around caretaking. I know that one of the challenges having been a hirer, other than bias, right? Because also you mentioned Alabama, like a ton of this, there is definitely bias at play. But also when you're a hirer in a relatively large agency in New York, you personally don't have much stability.
Right.
And it's hard to then think, you know what, I'm going to go on this, I'm going to change the world, and I'm going to go on this huge excursion and bring people in from all kinds of places into roles that they might not even survive for more than 3 months.
Right.
And by the way, there's so much pressure because you're working on 3 pitches. Mm-hmm. And so I think that kind of pressure, not to excuse the bias and not to, and I'm being dramatic, but I think that kind of pressure, having lived in it, and also getting hundreds of CVs for one job when you don't have time, if you're in an independent agency, to go through them all, it's really difficult to kind of change these norms. They have been changing, I believe, in some agencies, but it really does require, I feel like, the head of the department and maybe the head of the agency to invest significant amounts of time in making this stuff happen, because it's, you know, that lack of stability you have as an hirer yourself, bringing people into a role that might not last, it's it can lead to a little bit of, you might have to put the blinkers on just to survive. And I think that plays a little role, whether it should or not. That's a separate point.
Sure, totally. And that makes complete sense. And I've had some conversations since the piece came out with some decision makers. And it's interesting because, you know, I am this creative from Alabama that's only been in the industry for 2 years. And so that's why I made that effort before I started writing the piece. I was reaching out to people, you know, getting different opinions, different perspectives, and then continuing those conversations after. And it is a very, you know, difficult issue to tackle for sure. It's something that's, you know, systemic, and it will require a lot of resources. And so it's interesting to hear from people like you who have that perspective and that look behind the curtain. And I've really enjoyed, you know, talking with people like you, because it helps me, you know, understand. And then, you know, as we all work together, find solutions for it.
Yeah. It's hard for me to hear some of these points and not to go into things I've read in history. And again, friends in the South, I'm not judging. The idea of education in the South is a difficult idea, because the ideas of freedom and liberty in parts of America, maybe all of America, but in certain parts of America, those ideas were for white Christians. Mm-hmm. And education meant that you might educate people to their own rights, and they could get, quote unquote, this is from a history book, and I know this is a loaded term, but people could get uppity. And in states where education is not prioritized, which is arguably speaking most, and when I hear someone like you say, yeah, they don't get educated, they go to the mines, it's not difficult to feel slightly conspiratorial, that there's some kind of conspiracy going on within some of these places, that they don't want to support education because that'll maintain status quo of hierarchy and power. And guess what? You've got a new generation of employees, my friend, who runs the mine. Congratulations. Mm-hmm. Do you think any of these are plausible thoughts?
I think so. People in Alabama have very strong feelings about our education system. We have huge issues with segregation and things like that. And there's lots of, you know, very high level political things that go on. But, you know, the people here that do care about education and who see that as a priority in their lives, it's a huge issue. And, you know, at times, you know, it's just all over the map, really. You know, you'll have people here who can afford to send their kids to the best school because they can afford the best house and the best suburb of Birmingham. And, you know, there's issues, there's all sorts of issues about, you know, oh, well, the taxes from this city aren't going to this city, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, I mean, I definitely think that's plausible, that there's active things happening to keep people from getting an education.
Yeah, yeah. And that also interlaces with the transport system and gerrymandering. Like, it's pretty crazy when you break it apart. But again, friends in the South, if I'm offending you, I'm not trying to. I'm just laying some stuff on the table in a very straightforward way. Portfolio school. I see kids doing that here, and they're not kids, they're grown-ups, you know, for a year or two. And I'm like, damn, I don't know if I could have. I don't think I could have done that. Mm-hmm. Like, how did you get through that?
So I was just lucky enough to stumble upon, you know, like I said, with the trip and Minerva. So I was just, it was pure luck of me finding this program. But, and even with our program, it's so new, you know, I have interviewed at a couple of different places, and I won't name any names, but they'll be like, yeah, well, you didn't go to a portfolio school, so ... And it's like, well, I did go to a portfolio school. You just don't know about it. So I think there's just not only portfolio school in general, but those that have, you know, these high reputations and connections at these big agencies. So me personally, it was just pure luck. But yeah, I would say just pure luck.
Oh, man, I'm having the opposite thought, and sorry to kind of mesh some of my story into yours, but I remember when I first moved here, I was looking at CVs. I'm like, oh, damn, people are going to portfolio schools. What's that?
Yeah.
I never worked with a strategist who went to portfolio school, and I've rarely worked with people who studied advertising in college, but that's a huge industry here, these things.
Yes, they definitely are. And we always had, you know, I have friends that went to different portfolio schools, and I love them. I do think they're great. But we did always have that scrappy mentality of, oh, well, we're up against, you know, VCU Brand Center kids and all of these different things. So there's definitely that competitive level of things amongst portfolio school kids and people who did not go to portfolio school. I definitely feel like there's a rivalry there, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You make a point in this article as well about internships, and that not everybody can actually afford to be an intern. And I heard that again in my early years in New York, where not only can there be, not judging it, a lot of nepotism, where someone knows someone, they get them in. And you see it quite blatantly and publicly, actually. I don't know. Maybe I'm going to have to do that when I get older. I don't know. I mean, it's just, I hadn't seen it in such a big way.
Right.
But again, stakes are high, so I guess it could make people behave in certain ways. But the idea of not being able to afford to do an internship, were you able to afford to do your internship?
I actually worked two jobs. So I had Lewis as an internship, and then I also worked at Apple in Birmingham. So I had two jobs while I was doing my internship, but I also was taking out loans to pay for my living expenses. So I eventually got to quit my job at Apple with the help of those loans and work exclusively at Lewis. So I was lucky enough to do that. But yeah, I mean, for so many people, it's not even an option, especially in these larger cities with these huge cost of living expenses. And, you know, I touch on this in the piece, but, you know, the grind and, you know, the hustle and this mindset that's perpetuated is completely toxic, in my opinion, because, you know, we can't expect people to, you know, move to New York and only have a promise of a 3-month internship on $15 an hour and expect to pay and live their way. That leaves out a whole group of people that just literally cannot do that. And so, yeah, I was lucky because, you know, I'm in Birmingham, which is the lower cost of living, and I had my loans, but so many people, it's not even an option. They can't even think about that in their brains.
What kind of loans were they, and where did you get them from?
So some of my loans were you know, government loans in my loan servicer, you know, Navient, but I took out private loans through Sallie Mae. So when my expenses weren't being covered fully through my government loans, I took out private loans through them.
Do you get a decent interest rate or is it quite high?
It's 10.5% on my private loans. Ooh. So it's pretty high.
That's high.
Yes, it's pretty high, but luckily I have...
It's not credit card high, but it's high.
Right, exactly. So it's not a ton. Most of my debt is in my government loans, so, you know, which are at 4 or 4.5%. So that's better. That's the majority of my loans. But yeah, those private loans are, you know, those are the ones that I'm throwing most of my money at every month to get them down.
All right. So difficult situation. What are some of your thoughts or thoughts that you've collected from other people about how to address the barriers for someone like yourself to get into an agency situation in a big city or not a big city?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, as far as recruitment goes and like the pipeline, I think that immediately what we have to do is realize the importance of different perspectives. And I think different agencies are doing this. And I see some momentum in this area, so this is great. But, you know, looking at different places like Alabama, like, you know, different states outside of, you know, New York and LA and all these different places, once you look outside and encourage, you know, partner with community colleges in these areas and high schools in these areas. And there are a couple of agencies in Birmingham doing that now recently, which is really exciting. But I think it's, you know, reaching out to your community and seeing what talent you have available there. I think that's so important. And there's an organization called Brand Lab that is doing that. They're, you know, exposing all of these different high school students to marketing careers, and they have scholarships, and they have, I believe they offer internships, and they're doing things to help alleviate these issues. So I think we have to start looking at different people and people from different educational backgrounds and life experiences, you know, not looking at, you know, from a creative perspective, just these kids who've graduated from these prestigious portfolio programs. It benefits people, you know, to reach out. And, you know, we have an intern here at Lewis starting on Tuesday, and he graduated from Alabama, and he was like, "Hey, I didn't really know what advertising was on the creative side. I'm really interested. Can you please, you know, meet with me? I'm interested to learn." He had this fire, he had this drive and this passion, this grit. And so we took a chance on him, and he's starting on Tuesday. And so opening the door for him, I think it's, you know, learning which people have that passion and that grit, because, you know, that's one of the most valuable things in this industry. It's a hard industry. We face a lot of rejection every day, and we need people that can take that and push themselves through. So that's so important. So as far as that,
just on that, right, the passion and the grit, mm-hmm. because like I've joked a lot over the years about passion tantrums. I've done, you know, done guest talks or whatever in portfolio schools. I usually get cornered by a person for 30 minutes and they will spend 30 minutes telling me how passionate they are. And I'm a socially awkward individual after I've just been on stage. So I just stand there and I'm like, now I'm not going to do that anymore because I've given it a name. And now I'm like, oh, someone's throwing a passion tantrum, because a passion tantrum just sounds like this. I'm really passionate about what right. I do. I'm really passionate about what I do. And the challenge is the side hustle thing that that you have an issue with, which I completely understand, and I don't use that language. I look for stuff they've done for the sake of it. I would never call it a side hustle. Most CVs are pretty dull, and I don't know who's teaching people to write CVs, but they're often quite dull. And honestly, a lot of the portfolios that I've seen out of portfolio schools, there might be one piece of work or one slide or one page of the PDF for most of the things that I've seen, which is over 50, less than 100. It's enough. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, okay, that's interesting. The CV is a bit same. There's a couple of ideas in here. And obviously there are people who are brilliant, et cetera. So then I'm like, what did that person do in high school? Did they set up a zine? Did they run a website? Did they put on events? And so I look for some of those things as clues to passion, because passion doesn't just say passion does.
Right.
And because if they are creative, they would have put something out somewhere.
Right.
So, you know, I just want to put that out there as like a bit of a, again, arm wrestle with some of these ideas, because it's hard. There's no pure truth.
Yeah. For some. Oh, totally. And it's a totally case by case basis for sure. Like this intern in particular, you know, he worked at the Nike outlet in Tuscaloosa while he was going to school. And so he was really interested in photography. And so he partnered with his particular store. And when they did community events, he would do the photography for them. And he talked about specific goals he had in mind. And I think to me that that is what set him apart from, you know, someone just saying, oh, I just really want to do this. He's like, I'm taking, you know, I had this job that I had to do, but I turned it into something really interesting and I'm using my resources and these are my goals. And so definitely, you know, there does need to be a distinction between, you know, I just really want to do this versus I really want to do this. Here's what I'm doing now, and here's what I want to do in the future, for sure. So I definitely see where you're coming from.
But also, like the article that you posted that led me to want to talk to you is an example of what I would look for, which is someone who's done something because they're trying to contribute to a community because they care.
And right.
You've done strategy here. You've done research. You've got quotes from people. You've laid out the problem, and then you've laid out solutions. And so
right.
just that as a, I'll call it a body of work. I guess it's a piece of work. Just that as a piece of work, I'm like, okay, there's some electricity there. What's all that about?
Yeah.
As opposed to, here's my standard portfolio that looks like most of the others. Here's my CV that has way too many long words that I know you don't want me to use, boss.
Right.
And I'm now going to stand, corner you and throw a passion tantrum.
Right. Totally. And I think too, you know, and it's different for everyone at different levels, but I think just allowing those conversations to happen instead of, you know, say if I were to reach out to you, you know, being from Alabama, I feel like for a lot of people, it would be easy to be like, well, I don't really know who this person is. She's from Alabama, like whatever. But, you know, saying, oh, I'm going to reply or I'll answer her call or I'll do whatever and get to know her on a holistic level. And I know that's not possible for, you know, like I said, everyone to do at every level. But I think once we start opening those doors more and more, that's where you're going to get to know someone on a more holistic level instead of, yeah. you know, I'm just looking at your portfolio or I'm just, you know, doing this or doing that. And I think that's going to be how we start to evaluate people a little bit deeper, just by simply having conversations. And, you know, no one knows everything. And I think that's the biggest learning lesson too. You know, when I started writing this, I had never written a blog or a piece before. And I thought maybe 50 people would read it and move right along. But, you know, before I started writing it, I was like, well, I'm going to talk to a bunch of different people because, you know, I have my own perspective, but I think it's important to understand this from other people's point of view. And so I talk to people in different countries and different departments and different industries, honestly. And I learned so much just from doing that and have continued to do that since writing this. And so I've learned a lot through just that.
Yeah, it's a good challenge. How do you get, and I'm going to imagine we're talking about hirers in large cities. How do you get people who could hire someone like you, who often don't have much job stability themselves, who are inundated by bureaucracy and a lot of people, a lot of emails, and who might be working really, really long hours, traveling a lot all over the place? How do you get someone like that to know you? Because you could put the onus on them, but that's, you know, especially let's say they got a little family as well, that they're not gonna have much time on their hands. Rachel Mercer from RGA, she talks about how Twitter is a platform that she uses to try to get to know people, whether or not that she's interacting with them, but she'll go through people's tweets to see what they're about. And so I think, and again, I guess I could also hear the counter argument to that, which is like, well, I don't have time to tweet. I have all these other things that I need to do. I have people to take care of. I don't have time for any of that. That's an awkward arm wrestle, but I think it's a nice problem statement for people to wrap their heads around.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think that's going to be something that we work through as we start to address this issue. If I'm being honest, I think it's going to have to start from the very top. And, you know, some, you know, big decision makers have reached out to me to talk and talk about solutions. And I think that's going to be where it has to come from. And they're going to have to start putting, you know, more inclusive strategies in place, whether it be we're taking college degree requirements away, we're going to, you know, reserve these dorms that are open during the summer so our interns can have somewhere to stay for free, we're going to offer free transit, stuff like that is going to have to start happening. And then, you know, a culture change of we're going to have to change how we're evaluating talent. And that's the biggest, most difficult part for sure. And, you know, like I said, I don't know everything and I don't have all of the answers, but I think, you know, starting these conversations like we're having is going to be the best way to figure out what that solution is.
Yeah, I feel like a few of the big solutions that are out there, obviously it could start with government policy. That's one way to get these changes to happen. Then you've got people talking about how businesses benefit when certain ideas that might seem unnecessarily ethical to parts of the business population get put into place, that they benefit the business. You can moralize and say it's the right thing to do and then shame when people don't do that. And that's been a pretty big part of what's been going on the past 2 or 3 years, especially to improve gender representation in advertising industries in New York. What I'm curious about is the different business models, because the problem here is that not many people are playing a long-term game where that long-term game involves the keeping and developing of human potential, because there isn't much stability because of the way that this industry is. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple of things that I've seen. I do spend a little bit of time watching the Major League Soccer world. Yeah. And there's this concept there with the MLS of having selling teams and buying teams. And in that world, a lot of clubs don't want youth academies because they're like, we'll just buy players. We don't want to develop them. And so there's this debate within that world about having academies to develop young players. And then in the past 2 years, a few clubs such as Atlanta, which is doing an amazing job, and have pulled players in largely through South America. I mean, there's like other clubs who've, like from Dallas, New York Red Bulls, NYCFC, who've got academy players now in Europe. And the money people are now seeing that there's an incentive to develop talent. And I haven't heard a lot of ideas in our industry, at least, about this. And the closest, there's like an interesting business model. I've got a friend who runs a company called Hacker School that used to be called Recurse Nation. And the idea is you get to do a three-month tech sabbatical. And I don't think you get paid for it. You have to compete to get into it. But she makes money, or her company or organization, she's quite punk, so she might have an issue with some of the words I just use. They actually earn money by placing people in jobs, but you don't have to have them place you in a job. And right. So there's an incentive there for the development of and grooming of human potential that I don't think advertising industry has really spent much time thinking about. In your time exploring this topic, have you heard anything to do with that?
Yeah. So retention has come up in a couple of different conversations. And I think it's hugely important because you're right. And I think I say this in my piece, but there is a reason there aren't, you know, recruiters on, you know, junior college campuses saying, hey, come work in advertising. You're going to be really stable and you're going to have a really fulfilling career, because it isn't the case right now. You know, it is a very volatile industry at times with layoffs and pay cuts and, you know, just like we were talking about before with internships, like, hey, move to New York for this 3-month internship. We don't know if we have a job for you, but, you know, come anyway. So there's definitely an issue there. And I think I don't exactly know how to address this part of the issue yet. I think it's something that I'm learning more about as I talk to different people, because you're totally right. It is an unstable industry at times. And I'm not exactly sure how to solve that.
What's been the most surprising part of you publishing these thoughts?
I think the most surprising part is how many other people have had similar experiences to me. A lot of people have reached out and said, oh, hey, here's my story. And so, you know, I think it's easy to sit wherever you are and say, oh, there's not very many people like me and all these things. But I've learned, you know, from all over the world, there are people that have had this experience. And there are more of us than I thought, which is in a way very good, because, you know, everyone's going to be able to have a voice. And hopefully these people will start talking more openly about their experiences. And I had one woman on Twitter that said, hey, I, you know, grew up on a dairy farm in Kentucky, and I took out a ton of loans to go to ad school. And I had no idea that this many people had the same issue, and I really mostly kept it to myself because I felt out of place and I didn't really talk very openly about it. So I think that's the most surprising part of this, is how many people have had this experience. And I think once we band together and we, you know, have these conversations and talk about this issue openly and what we can do and learn from it and, you know, move forward, I think that will be great. But yeah, definitely that's the most surprising thing for sure.
Well, thank you so much for joining me on Sweathead today. I hope you keep going with these topics and recruit more people into helping solve them. I think they're important. And if you care about humans, these are topics worth caring about. Yeah. This is the best place for people to find you on the internet.
You can find me on Twitter at @Mary_Busby. That's my fave internet app of choice.
Cool. Well, kind regards to everyone at Lulz Communications. And for those who don't know, this is an in-joke, because there's a place that many people would read as Louisville, but you can pronounce it at least 20 ways. Is that correct?
Yes.
And it's not in Alabama. I know my geography.
Right.
But one of the ways is to imagine your mouth's full of popcorn or cotton candy.
Yeah, Louisville, yeah.
Louisville. So now, that's from right. Now on, Lewis Communications. And by the way, Australians, Louisville is Louisville. It's not Lois, Louis, it's Louisville. Shout out to the friends at Lewis Communications. That's my point. That was a very rambling way to end. But thank you for joining me here on Sweathead today, Mary.
Thank you so much for having me.
Boys.